Support for Science Questions comes from USU's College of Science, advancing the educational experience of future scientists with advanced research in the lab, field, and outer space. When students and faculty learn together, discovery follows. Information is at usu.edu/science.
He who controls the spice controls the universe.
Temple Grandin says it best. This is Science Questions. I'm Sherry Quinn.
And I'm Susie Montgomery.
The boom and bust cycle has defined the oil and gas industry for decades, but the latest boom is literally shaking up towns.
Call 911, where's your emergency?
Hey, my house just shook really bad.
Yes, it probably was an earthquake.
You can hear it coming towards you kind of like you would a train. You feel it under your feet.
It shook our whole house about off the foundation, ma'am.
Good evening. Since September, there have been 843 earthquakes in the Greenbrier Guy Swarm. This fault was previously unknown until...
Oil and gas companies are fast and furiously breaking new ground in pockets all over the nation, bringing jobs and money to towns near you. It's called hydraulic fracking, known in short as hydrofracking or fracking. The technique is drilling into shale, causing a web of fractures that crack open and release deep underground reserves of natural gas and oil, otherwise unattainable.
I grew up in Ridgway, Pennsylvania. It's a very small, quaint, very historic type town.
That is Zach Pontius from Ridgway, Pennsylvania, a young artist now living in Salt Lake City.
Last Christmas, not this past, I was home for 3 weeks or so, and I was driving across Interstate 80 in Pennsylvania at night, and I was on there for, 40 or 50 miles, and there was one semi and large pickup truck and sort of dually after another, and they all had Texas license plates, and I think that was the moment where I was like, what's really going on here, why? And it wasn't like just the same five vehicles that I was beside, like they were passing me, like just flying by over and over again, so... for like a stretch of 30 plus miles. So then I started to delve into the hydraulic fracturing, Pennsylvania, New York State, and West Virginia, specifically because of their Marcellus Shale formations where, it's just all over national news now. They refer to it as the Saudi Arabia of natural gas.
We're pretty much at ground zero. There's a lot of activity going on both to the north and to the south of the city, although we currently have a ban on any drilling in the city itself.
John Stoltz is professor of biology and the director for the Center of Environmental Research and Education at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Stoltz lives and works in the area, prime fracking ground, because of the plentiful water and shale.
The big issues or concerns have been the different chemicals that are used in the hydraulic fracturing and the eventual fate of both the water that's pumped down into the ground as well as what comes back up.
In the last 5 years, 40-plus companies have leased private and public land to drill for natural gas.
What I was really shocked to hear initially, especially talking with people who had been drilled, had leased, that, the industry came and, back a couple of years ago and almost stealth-like set things up. People were getting $7 an acre for their lease agreements. They were getting 12.5% for the royalty rate, which is mandated. That's the minimum that the state allows. And they weren't telling them necessarily that they were going to be drilling for this particular type of natural gas and that it was going to involve the fracking and things like that.
The landscape is now littered with hundreds of wells alongside tons of heavy equipment, like chemical storage trucks, frack pumping units and blenders, wastewater impoundments, taking up about 6 acres per well and a surface area about the size of a football field, often stationed smack dab in the middle of a farmer's field, or on state and national forest land.
The oil and gas drilling have been done in Pennsylvania for over a century. I mean, the first oil well was drilled up in Titusville by Colonel Drake back in the 1850s. So when you talk to local people around here who have been here a long time, they say, oh yeah, we've been there, done that. But when they realize that in order to do this kind of drilling, it requires acres and acres of land just for the drilling pad itself, you don't really appreciate the magnitude of it until you get the aerial aspect.
When they leased this land in the forest, and did they have to rip out the trees?
Absolutely. And because of the nature that if you don't frack, you don't get gas, and each one of these pads needs about 6 or so acres, typically you need to have multiple pads. Essentially, they're talking about 40-acre spread, so you're going to have a pad every 40 acres.
The goal is to drill below groundwater to access the gas that sits trapped in the valuable shale. In Pennsylvania, once a sea 390 million years ago, the Marcellus Shale, a large deposit that stretches all the way from Kentucky through upstate New York, through parts of Ohio and onto Pennsylvania, is a sought-after commodity where there's currently a whole lot of fracking going on.
We should stop and note, this isn't anything new. Hydrofracking started in 1949 with Halliburton, now an old technique but with a new face, making it extremely profitable. In the last two decades, North America has paired hydrofracking with horizontal drilling, burrowing underground, extending the zone of impact of the well a mile in any direction.
Desperate times call for desperate measures. We are at the point where we're tapping unconventional gas sources, the hard-to-reach fossil fuels deep in the Earth's reservoirs, into shale that sits underneath highly populated areas, resulting in a steady stream of outcry from United States Easterners. Where there is shale, there is fracking, or soon to be, especially since the 2005 Energy Policy Act, passed by Bush and Cheney, that encourages oil and gas production on federal lands, increases companies' access to federal lands who want to drill or lay gas pipelines, and prevents the EPA from regulating hydrofracking. And this appears to have been a long-term plan, Halliburton being a major player in today's hydrocarbon industry. In high-density areas like Western Maryland, over a quarter of land in Garrett County, which sits atop this buried treasure, has been leased to hydrofracking companies.
The industry has moved extremely fast. I mean, the number of wells drilled per year has gone up exponentially in the last few years. At this point, they're doing a really good job at getting, you know, the public to buy into this whole thing. But I honestly think on the day-to-day operations that the oversight isn't there. I mean, a lot of these facilities, once they're in production, are, you know, there's nobody on site, and they're everywhere.
Do they have to do environmental impact statements in these forests?
No. Well, that's why, you know, for instance, the Heinz Foundation is funding this work on the baseline study for the 10 Mile Creek watershed, because the companies are not required to do this. Currently, just to put things in perspective, our state legislature is actually trying to negotiate and craft some legislation that will, yes, tax the industry, but in return will essentially negate any ability of local municipalities to zone the activities. So as one representative said, it will be harder for you to put an addition on your house, like put a garage on your house, than it will be to drill a gas well on your property.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, but you're going to destroy the state with your commentary on fracking.
You guys lie, man.
It's
you
incredible. Frack
lies.
Frack Liberty and Peace are a bogus shill organization, and you publish that. It's crap, and it's going to ruin the state.
Major protests in Maryland, New York, and Pennsylvania are gathering attention, with people shouting slogans like, "No fracking way," while many states have put the brakes on fracking, passing legislation demanding more regulation. Wyoming, along with New York, have had small successes, being the first two states in the U.S. to require public disclosure of all chemicals used in fracturing. Whereas other states like Ohio are pressing on with plans to frack, even historically protected and sacred features like the Delaware River Basin are on the wanted list, in trade-off for short-term economic growth. Josh Fox, the director of a 2010 Sundance film about the dangers of hydrofracking, is actively trying to protect the Delaware River.
The Upper Delaware is one of the Northeast's most important watershed areas, providing clean water to Trenton, Philadelphia, southern New Jersey, and it is part of the interconnected watershed system that provides water to New York City, altogether providing water to 15 million people. Gas drilling and hydraulic fracturing is an inherently contaminating industrial process that injects millions of gallons of water at enormous pressure to break apart rock and release gas from underground formations. Watersheds across the nation have been contaminated with plastics, carcinogens, neurotoxins, and endocrine-disrupting chemicals, and with explosive natural gas.
Whoa!
It causes massive land scarring, air pollution, a public health crisis, massive truck traffic, miles and miles of pipelines, blowouts, spills, accidents. It is a whole-scale industrialization.
The economy's bad, so they push the idea of job growth and commerce and money. The war on terror. I think we're all tired of hearing about, you know, relying on terrorists for oil consumption. So it's just a lot of things that just sort of, the Bush administration, I mean, not to get too much into politics, but when their vice president was the former CEO of a company, Halliburton, that developed this technology, you have to wonder what they're putting in place. You know, it was definitely a perfect storm with low unemployment. Rural farmers and things obviously need the money to lease out these huge plots of land, and, you know, that helps them for... Absolutely. Like, I can totally understand, like, money talks and people need money. And, you know, if you're getting $5,000 an acre just to lease it out, not counting whatever you're getting when they start pumping natural gas off there. I mean, I can sit back and say I would never do it. But, you know, if I'm going to make $250,000 right off the bat, that's a lot of money.
So is this like the gold rush? Like, everybody's running in and competing?
Yeah. It's exactly what it is. And it's really a boom and a bust. So, you know, this could last 10 years, this could last 30 years, but it certainly isn't going to be 100 years of natural gas production for this Marcellus formation. As soon as they come in, they leave faster. I mean, it's going to be a ghost town.
Zach recently returned from Elk County, Pennsylvania, where nothing is like it used to be.
The road that I drove from my home to where I went to college, it's about a two-hour drive, but it goes directly through the Allegheny National Forest, and that is a road that I've, you know, also driven thousands of times since I was a kid, and I absolutely love that drive in the fall. I mean, northwestern Pennsylvania is spectacular in the fall, and so I saw new roads that just went into the middle of the woods and that never were there before, and, you know, some other things, you know, just sort of popping up, some more vehicles, just sort of like normally undisturbed areas. It's really interesting when they burn the gas wells off, the, you know, big flames sort of coming off the top of the gas well. I mean, you could see those sort of glowing or the flame like off in the distance. So it's very strange. It's not the northwestern Pennsylvania that I've grown up with and I love. I left Pennsylvania really kind of angry and upset. Felt like, you know, these outsiders aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're not taking anything into consideration. They're being really sloppy with everything that they're doing. And, you know, there's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of greed. And there's a lot of people being hurt.
Since his latest visit, there are even more roads, at least 10 new ones in the last year, leading to clear-cut areas and wells strewn throughout the forest. Zach began doing artwork inspired by hydrofracking. It was dark. Using lots of black charcoal, he made large mixed-media works on paper that looked like magnified cross-sections of fracking sites, with deep pockets violently opening up. After devouring every anti-fracking article he could find, and going through several stages of grief, Zach worked through his anger, and he says he came to this conclusion.
I just want to, you know, document and educate and get people having a conversation that's not fracking's terrible and, or, you know, fracking's great. You know, it's not black and white. You know, it is a service that we are currently needing as far as an energy crisis goes, but it's not the sustainable one because it's so temporary. It's not a viable source of long-term economy.
I know you were out west and you came back and saw it, but it seemed like all of a sudden these camps just started popping up. What did you see, actually?
There's definitely a lot more of a presence, you know, like the kind of divey motel, hotel areas are sort of full and the bars become, you know, more full. And I guess that's sort of where they're, you know, helping our local economy.
There is a temporary uptick in the service industries. And when there are more people, there's more crime. Well pad workers are filling hotel rooms and rental prices are rising. But in this boom, who is making the real money?
So if you calculate that you get about
$4 per 1,000 cubic feet, you're going to make some money.
Range Resources, a major operator in Marcellus Shale, reported Tuesday record gas production in 2011, reaching its year-end production target of 400 million cubic feet per day, nearly doubling its 2010 year-end output. By our calculations, that is a gross income of an average of $1.6 million a day, an enticing sum. But at the cost of the environment and our health? Fracking trucks drive night and day down the main strips of tiny American towns. Zach's stepfather from Ridgeway, population 4,500, has his own statistics.
The water trucks that bring water to these frack sites, they fill up and they bring it back and forth, and it creates a lot of pollution in the town, a lot of noise. They tear up the roads because these roads were never built to sustain the amount of traffic. So he was down there and he said that he counted a semi come through every 45 seconds. So in the hour that he was down there, it was like something like 700 trucks sort of just barreling through our small downtown. And I think he was pretty shocked by that. Just one after another after another.
The endless stream of trucks zigzagging across the country carrying fracking waste and fuel is one of the problems. The other is contaminated drinking water.
The reality is the same. I show pictures. I've been out there. I've talked to people. You know, I've been working with people who have contaminated wells, trying to figure out how these different components that are now making their water undrinkable, how they got there. Okay, the industry isn't going to answer those questions because they're in denial at this point. And, you know, they're helped by the 2005 Energy Act. Unfortunately, once you contaminate an aquifer, it takes centuries. There was a study recently done by researchers at Duke University where they showed a correlation between methane gas contamination in drinking water wells and proximity to these horizontally fracked wells. Up until May of this year, the companies were actually allowed to bring this water to local wastewater treatment plants who were simply diluting it. And as a result, some of this, the components that were in the wastewater was getting into our rivers. That was a source of our drinking water, and so there were things like bromide showing up in the drinking water.
And what is the problem with that?
Well, the problem when you have bromides and residual organics in your drinking water, the final step of disinfection is typically to chlorinate. And that in combination creates what are called trihalomethanes, or things like bromiform and chloroform. And that's not something that you want in your drinking water.
I think that the long-term effects are fairly well diagnosed.
Canadian John McLennan is a professor of chemical engineering at the University of Utah. He has 30 years' experience working with the petro and technology companies.
I frankly don't see any health risks, okay. To be honest. Let me qualify that statement. We realize that the air quality needs to be dealt with, okay? And the way that that will ultimately be dealt with is that people will develop improved methodologies for hydraulic fracturing using lower volumes and increasing efficiency. So the air quality does indeed need to be dealt with. Water quality, people are moving in that direction. Water supply is an issue. So once again, the methodologies for hydraulically fracturing will need to be refined to minimize the amounts of water that are required. Surface releases, there's no reason that any of those should happen. I mean, that's a function of proper engineering and care on location. And those should be feasible to deal with those. Subsurface disposal of water and induced seismicity is something that needs to be understood further and dealt with. But once again, it's an engineering problem that can be addressed.
Do you think with the rate of the pace of the drilling that, I mean, a lot of these issues haven't been resolved yet, but it's going fast. And but should it slow down until we catch up a little bit with these technologies in order to deal with these?
You know, the issue is complicated by the fact that if it does slow down, the price of gas will it is a supply and demand issue. And I think the industry is moving quickly to resolve some of these issues. Moratoriums, it can make sense for people to catch their breath and understand the regulations, but ultimately from a point of domestic hydrocarbon supply and particularly, you know, some of the geopolitical situations that we're dealing with and guaranteeing supply, I think it's an issue that we have a national, we should have a national mandate to really enfranchise everybody and improve the technology rather than shutting it down.
And then it's also the issue of renewables, right? I mean, instead of focusing on them, and which, I mean, I know we are also doing that,
sure.
but could be more so instead of this technology that...
I think if you look at the forecasts, hydrocarbons are going to be part of our... Fossil energy is going to be part of our energy-generating mix for the next half century as we transition to renewables. And in order to maintain a secure domestic supply at prices that are affordable to the consumer and to minimize the environmental consequences, I think that there needs to be federal encouragement, mutual discussion.
But you see that this is an essential part of the mix.
I'm not an economist, and I'm not a seer, but the figures, I mean, tend to show that as alternative energy is brought more and more into the mix, that hydrocarbons will still be part of the domestic supply.
We're stuck in a fossil fuel economy. There's the mindset that, you know, you have the ability, you've got this technology, so you want to use it. You want to use chemicals, you want to use drilling, and you're not thinking differently.
Curious to know how long that they expect these gas reserves to last into the future.
Optimistic estimates say that there's probably 500 trillion cubic feet of natural gas trapped in the Marcellus alone and probably a similar amount in the Utica. But when you realize what you need to do in order to get that gas, you know, they are not joking when they say this is going to be a game changer. This is going to change Pennsylvania and Ohio and potentially New York. It's going to look just like Texas.
The consumption of our energy source that drives our global economy now is ultimately bag on our head. We will, you know, take our bag off so we can see the alternatives that are around us, you know.
That is biologist Yuri Gorby talking to us on Skype.
Sustainable agriculture, community-based farming, these are things that are people will laugh at now because it doesn't generate any funding. Well, everybody's leaving Iowa farms because there is no farming there anymore for family farms. But without that stuff, we are gone, man.
Gorby, now a USC professor of biology in San Diego, grew up around farmers and coal miners in a small West Virginia town. He does not decry drilling altogether, but he is heartbroken over the latest fracking trend in his area.
It's not a bad thing. I mean, if you really do a controlled frack, even in like in a vertical well, it is possible to efficiently recover the gas in those types of wells to use locally, but not on the magnitude, not what they're trying to pull out from these formations that are causing now earthquakes. We do it slowly, and we can even like propose that Appalachia just say, look, we're going energy independent. Like, you Oklahoma guys, get the hell out of here. We can use this for our own local economies, and I would support that.
Gorby's issue is that fracking is a quick fix to meet the U.S. insatiable energy demand, and without knowing the risks and with little regulation, the environment is at stake.
We're talking about, like, if 60,000 wells in western PA are each putting in 3 million gallons of contaminated water into the subsurface, that is more than what the Department of Energy has ever done in terms of waste disposal for radioactivity. They're developing Superfund sites is what they're doing right now. They're laying the groundwork for Superfund sites, which is terrible.
According to the Brooklyn, New York-based nonprofit group Water Defense, across the country, state regulators have documented over 1,000 incidents of groundwater contamination related to fracking. In many cases, water is so polluted with gas that people can literally light their water on fire right out of the tap.
I think all of the hydraulic fracturing service companies and the operators are conscious of this and are doing their best to be pumping fluids that don't have environmental consequences. In most cases as well, the hydraulic fracturing, with some exceptions, is done at depths that are substantially below the depth of the groundwater table. If there have been hydraulic fracturing fluids encountered at the surface, it's related to encountering what are called legacy wells, wells maybe drilled in the 20s or 30s that weren't properly abandoned.
The pollution is hard to pinpoint because we don't have baseline data measuring toxicity before the fracking began. And so, no one's taking the blame.
We have to know that when the companies, the gas companies state there are no scientific data to demonstrate the contamination of, except for this one in Wyoming now, that there is contamination of aquifers from frac fluids. That is true. That statement is true. But this, the reason it's true is because there hasn't been sufficient baseline data generated to say that, you know, these things are related, because there are no before measurements. But the reason it's not, they're not available, is because there's no funding and there hasn't been any scientific studies presented or conducted. We want to raise the awareness, and we want to generate like sufficient data, like the data that's necessary for people to make an independent decision about whether to lease or not. If not, then we're going to take away their potential for them to make some money on this. But they should do it with awareness.
There are close to 2.5 million fracturing sites worldwide, and according to NSI Technologies, approximately 60% of all wells drilled today are for fracking, 85% of which are in the U.S. It's now a bit of a race. Both anti-fracking protesters and pro-fracking drillers are picking up the pace. Will fracking technology reach acceptable standards, or will the protests heighten and subdue the drilling? It's certainly worth paying attention to.
We need to educate the public, and really, how are you going to be impacted when this industry comes into your town?
Zach continues to do artwork inspired by hydrofracking. His last piece involved ironing plastic grocery bags, gray ones, black ones, scanning the flattened bags and digitally manipulating them, resulting in an uncanny image of a desolate and slashed up topography, representing his interpretation of fracking. John McLennan is busy finding new ways to make fracking cleaner, using advanced recycling techniques and experimenting with food additives that reduce toxicity.
Yuri wants public awareness. In his hometown of Bethany, a small West Virginia college town and farming community, many private landowners have leased their land already to fracking. Bethany College, Yuri's alma mater, has also recently leased chunks of land to the Chesapeake Natural Gas Company, who've already installed the frack pad and dug the reservoir for the wastewater. Yuri wants to slow down the process so the science can catch up.
If you're going to proceed, then I will be in your face as a scientist to challenge you at every step.
SQ recently went to Fracking Ground Zero in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia to better understand the hydrofracking craze. Here is a montage produced by Susie about our visit to Appalachia, a glimpse of our upcoming series on natural gas drilling titled Appalachia Awakening.
This here's the well pad that was actually on fire.
Right?
There's 10 wells
on that pad.
We just come, that was Macedonia, we come out. Now we're in a big community of Silver Hill.
Yeah.
You wanna go see your buddy Rose? Or see where she lives?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hi Rose, how are you? Come on boys, help me out.
I asked Johnny how things was over his way.
Pretty good, we try and chase him to you.
You're doing a good job. You know, Kenny Mason moved me from the road. They're not using my road to bring all the truck back.
No.
Because I'll just act like I'm going to town and get right down here in the road and just suck. You know, they're not going around me.
I just popped the hood on the car.
This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSUFM HD1 91.5 Logan.